White Rocket Entertainment.
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 356.
We welcome you to Jack Hare Stadium for tonight's game.
Chris Davis takes it in the back of the end zone.
Let's watch some football. Now everybody, come on everybody.
They're not going to keep him off the field tonight.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yo, yo, yo. Let's watch some football.
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with TheWarEagleReader.com. And the War Eagle Sports Radio Network. And by people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family via Patreon.com. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
For a second, I wasn't sure you were with me, John. As he bailed, he's hit the silk, hit the ripcord, and gone out the window of the airplane.
You're on your own on this one, Pat.
Well, it's not a fun one. This is one of those weeks where I'm always glad that we do our shows on Monday nights now, because it gives us, you know, Saturday night and all day Sunday and early day, you know, daytime on Monday to kind of calm down and get some perspective. And I don't get upset like I used to. I've mellowed out over the last few years. As an Auburn fan, you either mellow out or you lose your mind, or both. Maybe I just lost my mind a while back, and this is the burnout husk that's left. But as my nephew said to me in a text yesterday, he said something about, I forgot exactly how he put it, but something about the veteran knowing something. I guess he was talking about me. He said at some point I said something like, "I've seen this movie before, 9-3 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, we got excited and caught up in the preseason with the promise and with the possibility, and there's still a lot of promise and possibility, but I think that sometimes reality reasserts itself, and we get reminded that even a really good team has flaws, and even a really good team can stumble, you know. And one thing that we're going to certainly go in depth on our team in that game, among other things. But one thing that this, I always say this when something like this happens, one thing that this reminds us of is how remarkable years like 2004 and 2010 were, and how special, because even in years when you have a really, really good team, you still need everything to bounce your way. And this is probably the earliest I've named one of our episodes going in. I already know what this episode is going to be called. You know me, usually I decide after we finish, and I'm sitting here at midnight trying to, you know, edit and post it. I decide what it's going to be called. But this episode is going to be called The Imperfect Storm, because I really feel like it took about six or seven things going wrong for us to lose that game. And I feel like six or seven things, all different things, all did go wrong, right? I mean, we needed to have more turnovers than they did. We needed for them to have way more time of possession. We needed for our defensive backs to melt down and not be able to stop interfering. We needed the referees to call everything on them but not call a key one on us in the same way. We needed our running game to struggle, our offensive line to struggle, our defensive line to struggle, and their quarterback to play like the best game he's ever played in his life. And you needed all of those things to happen, and for us to miss a long field goal, and for them to get a short field goal to win, and to throw practically a pick six on the second play of the game. It turned into that, essentially. I mean, you needed so many if just one of those many things I just listed, if just one of them had probably gone the other way, we would have won the game.
Oh, and there's more.
And there's more, yeah. So, you know, am I down on Gus? No. I mean, I'm critical of him, of course, and there's things he could have done better. But when we were clicking in that game, we were really clicking. The offense looked great for long stretches of this game. So I'm not down on Gus. I'm not down on any particular players. I'm not down on the team or the season or the program or whatever. I just feel like, man, it was one of those games. You know, it was kind of like, honestly, we were on the Florida side of some of those Auburn-Florida games with Spurrier. Think back to those games where we did beat Spurrier, like 93, 94, and 01. And it's like they were supposed to win. They were 20-point, you know, we were the 20-point underdogs. But, you know, everything bounced our way. We got the big interceptions. We kicked the key field goal at the end. I think we just kind of feel like Florida fans felt after those games.
That's fair. I mean, I think there was losing is harder when you have expectations.
Right.
You know, when you think, oh, man, we're just going to be lucky to make a bowl game or go 7-5 or maybe we'll be 8-4 or something, then it's different.
Yeah.
So I think that makes a huge difference. The reality is you're right in the sense that there were about 100 different things that happened in this football game, and if any one of them happened differently, Auburn would have won the game. Mm-hmm. And there's a math thing, the win probability, that takes like all the statistics in a football game and puts them into a formula and says, based on like how this team performed and how this other team performed, this is who should have won the game this percent of the time, basically, based on historical games and what's important in football games. And basically, those models showed that like if they played 100 times, Auburn won 83% of the time.
Yeah. Oh, I don't doubt it. I don't doubt
it
at all.
And that's what that says is that it really is – you know, a little bit fluky that LSU won this football game.
Absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. That's why you play the game, though. That's why we don't just compare stats and then move on with a win. Because right. Weird stuff happens. That's what makes it interesting. Even when it's depressing, it's still interesting. And you go, wow, well, that wasn't supposed to happen.
And I think it's easy for fans to pick on one of those specific 100 things, whether it's, like you said, the refs or a decision by the coaches or a decision by the quarterback or somebody else. And so I'm going to talk about a couple of other ones that people have probably forgotten about that I think are equally important that it kind of came back and bit us at the rear end in this game.
No kidding. Well, you asked the question on our outline, and I'll ask it to you then, and you can ask it to me too. You said, when did you seriously think we were going to lose the game? And I have two answers. So what are your answers? What's your answer?
People may not believe me, but I'm going to tell you, I never, ever thought we were going to lose the game until they called that pass interference, the second pass interference on the last drive.
Yep.
Until that point, it did not enter my mind that we were going to lose that football game.
I agree.
Even when we were down 10-0, I did not think we were going to lose that game. But when they got that second pass interference and I realized that put them in field goal range, then I was like, holy crap, I cannot believe we're going to lose this football game.
Yep. All right, well, I had two. See, this is for all the listeners that I need to be very clear about this. I have watched the entire game now. There's been three games this season, and I've gotten to watch live as it happened one of them, and that was Alabama State. I had to go back days later and watch the whole Washington game. I got most of it in before we went on the air, and I'd seen the highlights of the rest. The only thing I hadn't seen were a few, you know, second down and two runs and stuff like that that weren't in the highlights. I watched like the 30-minute highlight package. But I watched the whole thing. Well, this game, my uncle passed away suddenly, and I had to go down to Jackson, Tennessee Saturday and to the funeral and everything that had to do with that, and so and to dinner. And so I was either following it on the ESPN game tracker on my phone when I was able to sneak a peek, or I was listening. I listened to pretty much the fourth quarter on satellite radio driving home Saturday night. And when I was looking at the score in the first quarter and it was 7-0 LSU, I was like, oh, okay, it's going to be back and forth. Then it was 10-0 LSU, and I thought, good Lord, if LSU scores again, we're going to lose this game. Well, of course, then I look at it, it's 10-7, and it's 14-10 our way, and I thought, all right, everything's gotten back to normal. We got our act together. That's good. Everything's okay. So I'm listening to the and I missed the entire third quarter originally. Again, I've seen the entire game since then. People have questions about that. I just want to be clear. I've seen the entire game Sunday, okay? So we're driving back. I'm listening to the fourth quarter, and we're up, you know, what? We're up 21-10. I feel good. I'm like, oh, one more score, you know. We kick this field goal. Oh, we missed the field goal. That's all right. We're still up 10 or 11, whatever. I can't do math. Then they got the field goal, and it was 21-13. I'm like, well, they still need a two-point conversion just to go to overtime, but they're not going to score a touchdown. Then when they got that touchdown, I'm like, okay, that, you know, that fluky catch run touchdown. Then I'm like, okay, it's going to be one of those games where everything is bouncing the other team's way, and now we need another score. And then I thought, wait a minute. We never get that other score when we need it in this situation, and sure enough, we didn't. And we kept putting ourselves in the hole. We kept making mistakes. And so then, when they started getting those pass interference calls, and this is the other thing I need to point out. I don't want to do the whole analysis right now, but this is the thing I want to point out. I don't know about the rest of you folks, because I know it was on CBS. I was listening on satellite radio to Stan and Rod, okay? I was hearing them. And they painted a Rembrandt masterpiece painting for the entire fourth quarter of how the referees were not calling LSU, knocking our receivers down, holding our receivers, and if our defensive back sneezed, they'd call it on us. You know, they were saying it was to the point that, you know, two things can happen when they throw the ball. Either it's a catch or a pass interference call. So just keep throwing the ball, and that's what LSU did. So, you know, if you're the SEC and you hand out fines for announcers blaming the refs, Rod and Stan have got some fines to pay, because they were just flat out saying the referees are not calling anything like that on LSU. They're calling it all on Auburn. So when I started listening to that, I started getting this sense of, oh boy, you know, I could see it coming at that point. And so it didn't surprise me in the least when it played out that way at the end. Well, we'll talk more about the game in a little bit. But, and it, you know, you hate to have our big trip follow this. We really wanted to be 3-0, aiming for 4-0, home opener. I mean, not home opener, but SEC team at home, another one, another West team. And I was really down for a little while. I was like, you know, not only was I down about losing the game and down about what that could do to the season and everything, but I was down about getting ready to make a 10-hour drive to do a show when everybody's going to be down. And that's kind of depressing. I'm like, oh, I'm going to get all – it's going to take us a long drive down there, and everybody's going to be down. Everybody's going to be grumbling. Everybody's going to be bad-mouthing Gus and saying bad things about Stidham and – it's just, oh, geez, this has turned into an unpleasant thing. But then I got to thinking, it could have been worse. It could have been, we could have been down there for this game. And you made two good points about that. What did you say about if it had been us going down for this game?
If we had gone to this game, number one, they would have banned us from campus for being unlucky. And number two, we would have both probably passed away because it was like 100 degrees in that stadium, and my feeling went out to all the fans that were there all day. Like, that was a brutal, brutal home game to sit through, especially with that result.
Sit there in that oven and then lose is just, yeah, people not going to be happy. So I just want to appeal to the Auburn faithful that listen to our show. Don't be down. You know, in 2013 we lost LSU. Last year we lost LSU. Both times we made it work for us. We worked it out. All is not lost. And just let's have fun, right? This is Auburn football. So regardless of postseason implications, regardless of all the things that people whine and gripe and complain about on Twitter, including me, in spite of all that, we're going to go see Auburn play a football game in Jordan-Hare with all the big Auburn crowd that you and I for the first time in a long time. And so I'd like to enjoy that. So I hope everybody will enjoy it as well. Let's see. So here's what all we have going on for this coming weekend for Arkansas. We are recording a video. Well, recording a podcast is not actually what we're doing, but that's partly what we're doing. We're going to be filming a video live stream, basically, from the AU bookstore around 3:45, 4 o'clock-ish till around 4:45, 5 o'clock-ish. We are planning on having at least one or two guests come on. We have confirmed Brandon Marcello will be on with us. We're not sure who else we're going to get. We'll see. If that works out, of course, he's just, you know, his wife has just had a baby, so you never know what's going to happen there, and we understand that. But hopefully Brandon will be there. Maybe we'll have other guests. I don't know. But come by. We'll be inside the bookstore where it won't be so hot. We'll be doing our show. And come by, say hello. You can watch our show being filmed live. You can laugh and make fun of us and ask questions and stuff. You can also watch it online through our auwishbone.com webpage. You can watch the recorded version later there or on our YouTube AU Wishbone TV page. You should be able to listen to the audio version a couple of days later on our usual time because I have to get back home and edit it, of course. Or you can, like I said, you can come to the bookstore. And what about Auburn Elvis, John?
I wait to say a special thank you to Auburn Elvis, who's gone above and beyond and who's providing the technical support to make the live stream and the video recording and the live event recording possible, where Van and I are used to doing this from our homes with all the equipment already being set up. He's bringing stuff and setting it up and providing technical expertise to do things that we don't normally know how to do. So we really appreciate him going above and beyond to make this happen.
He really has. I mean, he's taken this on as like his pet project, and he's absolutely done an amazing job. He is our executive producer for this, and he's kicking butt.
And I think if you like the show, I think you're going to be impressed with some of the stuff he's doing in terms of the production value of the video version of the show is going to look really good, I think.
Yeah, I was just going to point like an iPhone at us and, you know, like stream it or something. And he's come in and got like set design and graphics and electronics and multicam, and like I'm almost intimidated by it all. I'm almost scared now. So I'm used to just sitting back and talking. I'm not used to all this. So this should be very interesting. Let's see. Also on Saturday, because the game is going to be Saturday evening, and so so after we do our thing on Friday, at some point later on Friday, we're hoping to do some kind of a get-together with the patrons, and we just need to hear back from a few of them as to if they're able to come, they want to come, and if we can figure out a place that won't be, you know, just like elbow to elbow and deafeningly loud. If none of our patrons really get back to us and are interested in doing that, that's perfectly cool. John, I'll, you know, do other stuff ourselves. That's perfectly fine. But if you guys want to get together, I just feel like that's something that we should offer our patrons who do so much to help us. We ought to get them a chance to get together and hang out and chat, talk Auburn football and whatever else. So that's all Friday. And then Saturday morning, it looks like from about 9 to 11 Saturday morning, we will be doing a book signing at the AU bookstore. So you can come in before the game, come in before lunch, and hang out with us a little bit, chit-chat. I'll have a small set of books to sell, and I will sign any you already have. If you already have a book, you want to bring it by, I'll sign it, and John will sign it. We'll talk to you.
That doesn't even have to be our books. You want to bring, like, you know, bring War and Peace or Dune, Game of Thrones, whatever we'll
sign. Game of Thrones. Oh, John, I'll sign Game of Thrones. We do our show about it. That's right. In fact, John, as soon as all this rigmarole is over, we got to do our Game of Thrones catch-up episode. I put the outline for it on our Google Docs. So, yeah, we need to get that in soon. And then what's the tailgate thing?
I've emailed a few people who have graciously offered and invited us to come by their tailgate. So in the afternoon, the plan is that we will walk around with Auburn Elvis and Walker and visit a few tailgates from a few people and just say hi and just kind of see what's going on around campus before we head off to watch Tiger Walk and that kind of stuff.
Cool. I'll bring a bunch of the AU Wishbone cards, and I guess I'll be wearing my AU Wishbone polo shirt on Friday, so I'll probably wear the bright orange one on Saturday so people can spot. Well, yeah, there'll be 8 million people wearing that. I'm not used to being a place where everybody wears orange shirts. This is going to be a culture shock for me. It's been a while. Anything else about our Saturday? I don't want to bore everybody to death that's not interested in this, but we want to make sure you all know what's going on so you can be involved. And again, remember, you can be involved just by going and watching the video afterwards or listen to the show. So,
and or if you have specific questions you want us to answer for that show, send them in during this week between now and then, and we'll do it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's get back to the thing we kind of have to talk about. The I didn't even see your outline here where you're talking about whose fault is this loss. I'd already thrown out a few names. Why don't we go through that first? I'm going to bring up the stats page while you give me your postmortem on who's who. We said it, a whole lot of things had to happen. What's the number one thing that went wrong that you blame?
I think a lot of fans blame the refs, and I get that. That's fair, especially because they were there at the end of the game. And I think there's a feeling in sporting events that the referee should not make a call that basically is going to determine the outcome of the end of a game unless it's really flagrant, which this one wasn't. I thought the referees was very uneven in terms of the calling. I didn't think the calls against Auburn at the end were completely wrong. But I did think there were some calls against LSU that didn't get called.
Yeah.
They never called holding on the LSU offensive line the entire game, and I thought there was a good bit of that. What I said is like, okay, if you're going to allocate some portion of blame, your choices are like the Auburn coaches, including the decision to go for it on the fourth down. And basically how prepared the team was to come out and play in the first few minutes of the game. The referees, the offensive line, I thought, did not play well at all. Jared Stidham did not have a good game. And I think the defense as a whole, like they admitted and Kevin Steele admitted, they didn't play up to their standard. They played okay. But for them, I think particularly that long touchdown play. But there were some other plays, too, that LSU made that I think they wish they could have back and do over. I would throw honestly a couple other people in there. I think Ryan Davis had his worst game probably as an Auburn player in this game. And we missed a long field goal.
Have we seen the end of Cam Martin as the starting running back already? 2 carries for 4 yards.
Maybe. I mean, I think he will play, and I think, against Arkansas, Southern Miss, Ole Miss, those kind of teams, Cam Martin could be perfectly effective and run for hundreds of yards. But I think against the LSUs, the Mississippi States, the Georgias, and Alabamas, he's not going to be effective. And we knew that before the game. We talked about this being a Whitlow game. And it wasn't just the carries. Like, he had I want to talk about the beginning of the game for a minute, okay? Mm-hmm. The first 5 or 6 minutes in the game, because I think more than the end of the game, this was when Auburn lost the game. More than the end of the game with the long pass play or the personal, the pass interference calls or any of that kind of stuff, or Auburn's failure to get a first down because we had, our own problems at offense in the game. I think Auburn lost this game in the first 5 or 6 minutes. Because I felt like LSU came out much more ready and focused, ready to play than we were. We may have been too hyped up because I felt like we were not – we didn't come out and execute. Mm-mm. And, again, I'm just going to run through a couple things really quick that happened in the first few minutes of the game that any one of these things, again, was huge. I mean, the first one is the Stidham interception. It was a play they had been setting up. They had run that kind of thing where the running back runs parallel to Stidham, like he's going to pitch it to him last week, and it was a setup for this play. But LSU clearly knew it was coming. On that play, Ryan Davis stood there and watched the ball come to him. And the LSU defender was next to Ryan Davis, and instead of standing there, he went and attacked the ball. He went to the ball and took it away. Ryan Davis was just standing there waiting. He needed to go to the ball and get the ball with his hands. And Stidham, again, there was pressure on Stidham. He was throwing on the run. So, not again, not his best throw either. So then LSU gets the ball, like you said. The LSU had two touchdown drives in this game, okay? One started at the 35-yard line after this interception, and the other one was the one-play drive we're going to talk about in a minute. So in this third on this short drive after the interception, they get to third and 11, and they've just had a penalty to get him down to the 15-yard line. It's third and 11. We rush five guys. They keep seven in. We don't get anywhere close to the quarterback, and their receiver beats Noah Igbinogheni badly on the inside for a first down. Then the second they go, they have first and goal. They don't do anything on first down. A second down, Burrow runs around to the right end, the right side. An Auburn defender has a hand on Burrow in the backfield, and he gets away and gets down the 1 yard line. So then they score. So then we get the ball back on the very first play. Ryan Davis does the thing where he basically drops it, and everybody thinks it's a fumble for a minute, which it probably really was a fumble because I think he took two steps before the ball came out. On the second down, there was a second and 10 play. They had really well – it set it up perfectly, and it was a pass to Cam Martin, and he was wide open, and the ball hit him in the hands, and he dropped it.
Yep.
And I went back and watched this. There was nobody – in front of Cam Martin. They had set the play up in a way that the receivers had pulled the defenders far away from that. He could have gone for 25 yards. Hmm. And at that point in the game, that was a gigantic play. And I think that as much as the running thing is why he did not come back in the game. Because that was a you're in there, you're an experienced guy, you played a lot, we need you to make a play here, and he didn't. Okay? And then on third and 10, we had a pass to Seth Williams that was broken up. It was a tough, tough play, and the defender did a good job broken it up. LSU gets the ball back again. We stop them, but then they punt, and we have the stupid penalty on the punt where we hit the guy out of bounds, and we have to start at our own 10-yard line.
One thing after another.
All of those were just little bitty tiny things that cumulatively added up to problems. And I want to go back to the other one. I thought the first 5 minutes and that one play, the 71-yard touchdown pass that LSU had, that when he throws the ball, there's four Auburn defenders in the area of the receiver, okay? And Deshaun Davis jumps up and almost makes the interception, and he took the blame after the game. And said he should have made it. The only way he should have made it is if he grew 4 inches. But he, made a huge effort and had a great game the whole game. He tried to make the interception and didn't. He missed it. But Daniel Thomas is the one who blew it. I was giving him a lot of credit last week, but he played terribly in this game. And on that particular play, he's running towards the LSU receiver. He has the angle. And he completely whiffs on the guy and then takes a terrible angle in pursuit, and the guy gets away and scores a touchdown. So 100%, Daniel Thomas should have tackled him the second he caught the ball. Fine, he catches the ball. That's not the end. But because he messed it up, the guy got away and got 71 yards. So those are the two, the first 5 minutes of the game, I think, get lost in all the stuff that happens at the end and all the other stuff. I think there's blame to go around for the coaches. I did not like the decision to go for the fourth down.
No.
I felt like, it's the Auburn LSU game. Points are going to be at a premium. Mm-hmm. Kick the freaking field goal. And we had run the ball on third down and not got close to getting the first down. So why would fourth down be different? Mm-hmm. And then on the play we employed on fourth down, which to me very similar to the play we ran on the goal line against Clemson last year. We had all of our guys bunched in really tight. So we had 11 guys basically in the box, two of whom were wide receivers. Okay. So Ryan Davis and Nate Craig Myers were basically in the box. Ryan Davis was in motion, and Nate Craig Myers was standing on the end of the line as a blocker, basically. And when you, I get it. They like that to bunt those guys in, and then you could have them slip out, catch a pass, whatever. But it allows all 11 defenders to come in really tight, mm-hmm. and you're basically going to run straight ahead. They know you're going to run straight ahead and not trying to run around the end. So they were able to GM extra guys in the middle of the line where you didn't have extra blockers. So I didn't love that play. And again, it's a slow developing play out of the shotgun on fourth and one when the defense is coming straight ahead in the center of the line 100 miles an hour. So I just don't think there's a lot of success there, and especially with the way the offensive line, the running game is playing. So that's
I might have run the play again instead if we were going to do that. That they ran against Washington on the on the little draw that scored the touchdown. Because that spread it out. It opened up the inside. This did the exact opposite, is basically what you're saying.
100%.
Yeah.
So, that's all I would say about that stuff. So let's talk about the Auburn offense and kind of what happened in that. We've already talked about it a little bit. I thought Ryan Davis didn't have a really good game. Stidham, if we're going to beat good teams, Jared Stidham has to play like at an all-conference kind of level.
Yeah.
That's just how it is. And the question I want to ask you and I want people to think about is, what is our offensive identity? What is the thing that we can hang our hat on, and when things get tough, we can go to that and get a first down?
Well, this was game three, John, and so as you know, in this era, we don't yet know that. And I think more than most years we don't know, because by this point in previous years, if we had a powerful running game, this is when it started to appear, either this game or next week. So it looks like the identity of this team is becoming Whitlow primarily running, and honestly, some of the young receivers, because Anthony Schwartz and Seth Williams – had the biggest, they had two catches each for 37 and 35 yards. Only Darius Slayton and Ryan Davis had more catches, and they didn't have as many yards.
And so, Seth Williams had a couple more targets. One was that a ridiculous catch he made going out of bounds.
Yeah.
They decided it wasn't a catch. And the other one was this one early in the game. So the one thing I want to say about that is, we always get on Gus for not trusting the youngsters, for not playing the young guys, for not including them. And I think it is very clear that he has gone the other way with these guys. He trusts Seth Williams more than he trusts a lot of the older players in that team. And he trusts Schwartz and Shivers, too.
Yes.
And those guys are going to play. And they're going to be, like you're saying, I think they're going to be a big focus offense. To me, where I was going with this is, you immediately went to the running game because that's who our identity always is.
Yes.
And I'm saying
it's not.
No. It's not who we are this year, so lean into it and be that team.
Yeah.
It's the receivers, and Stidham is who the core of the offense should be. And I think we need to go more in that direction. I mean, I'd go more 4 or 5 wide receivers, or the running back as the fifth wide receiver, and spread the other team out and throw the ball even more. And once that is, we're moving up and down the field on other teams of that, then we could go back to running the ball more. But I feel like we're, going to try and bang our head against the wall. And it's not like on the running back side, I think Whitlow is a redshirt freshman. Mm-hmm. I think a year from now or 2 years from now, he could be awesome. And I think Shivers is like the same way. He can play, but I think he's a year or two away from being someone who could be really effective against the good SEC defenses. And so to me, I think you have to go the other way, and therefore you have to try and spread the other team's defenses out by throwing the ball around him more. I think, I get it. It's, we want to run the ball, and that's who we are. And there are times in the game when I'm like, come on, just run the ball to get a couple of first downs. But I think, I think we have a really good quarterback, and I think we have really good receivers. And I think what we need to do is just focus on the pieces of that we can keep working, and make the other. And there are things that we can do in the passing game that nobody can stop. And my feeling is go that way with it.
Well, think about this. If you compare this team to previous Auburn teams of recent years, we have a passing quarterback who is more accurate. He is a better passing quarterback than arguably any of our quarterbacks over the last several years have been, by differing amounts depending on who you're comparing him to. I mean, he's considerably better than some, and he's somewhat better than others, but he's the best. But he's not the running threat that some of them were, although he does what he can with it. We don't want him to get killed, but he's not horrible at it. But he's not great at it either. He's serviceable to a certain degree that way. The running game, though, is far below, and part of that's the offensive line, far below what we expect. And the receivers so far, though they're showing lots of promise, so far these receivers are not that much better than our 2009, 2010 receivers, honestly. So what I'm seeing is a slightly better passing game from the passing point of view, about the same receiving game, though not as good as what Ryan Davis did last year, and a substandard offensive line play, and not anywhere near as good of a running game as we've ever had previous to this year under Gus. So when you look at all those pieces, it's easy to look at Stidham and say, oh yeah, Jarrett Stidham, NFL quarterback, all right, our offense should be great. But when you get past that, our offense is having to manufacture, you know, ways to, it's having to be very creative. And that's what I was saying. The two periods of this game when the offense really did look good, and that was late, that was the second half, you know, the second part of the second quarter, and then that one other drive in the third quarter. During those two phases of the game, I thought our offense was very creative. They did lots of good play actions, rollouts, the throws to Chandler Cox. They did a lot of creative, nice things that I was very impressed with to manufacture yardage. But other than that, the offense looked as inept as it has ever looked. It looked almost 2015 inept in some cases. So I right now, I don't see this offense as being anywhere near what it was hyped up to be. It's not horrible. It has certain elements that are really good, and it has certain elements that have not been good at all yet. And by the way, a guy I know that's very insightful at breaking down the very key points of football games, of Auburn football games, his analysis was this game was lost for Auburn in addition to all the many ways we've talked about. What it really came down to, we lost both line of scrimmage. Our offensive line was pushed around, couldn't do much, and our defensive line couldn't do what it's used to doing. And when you lose both of those in addition to all those other little things, it's really miraculous that it was close as it was. I mean, you know, we, other than that one fluky touchdown, we held them to three field goals after the first quarter. You should win. You should win a game where you hold the opponent to just three field goals after the first quarter.
You're right about the lines of scrimmage thing. Like, they, you know, our offensive line got overpowered, and you're right that they're not going to be. I think this offensive line is going to be solid, but I think I'm concerned their ceiling is lower than the past several offensive lines. Yes. And that's why, to me, like, the passing thing is the way to go, because that we could do some quicker passing. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have to hold the ball a long time, you know, get it in and out of his hand. You know, similar to some of the stuff, honestly, like some of the Big 12 teams do, or that the Eagles, the Patriots are doing last year. And, you know, I think that could work. And I think it would take pressure off the line, and I think down the road we'd be able to run a little bit better. But I think that's that to me is the formula with the highest ceiling for the offense in the short term.
Well, I mean, because LSU's offensive line was not that great, and they just max protected that quarterback and gave him a couple of big targets to throw at.
Well, and that's where the concern has to be for us, because, you know, I think, like, I love Nick Coe. You know that. Like, I think Nick Coe's really good. But I think he's playing the buck position, and he does not have the explosiveness, the speed up field that either Lawson or Jeff Holland did. And I think he's a, you know, much better run defender than one of those guys. And he's a good pass rusher, but he's not nearly as quick off the corner as those two guys were. And I think, you know, we missed that. And I think LSU's strategy was, we're going to keep, you know, seven guys in to block your four guys and then just wait for our guys to get open. And eventually they got open. You know, you think, like, we have, you know, basically enough guys back there to almost double cover them at some point. We ought to be able to cover them, but you can't cover anybody forever.
Right.
And we did not get enough pressure on him. You know, some of our guys need to beat their man up front if we're going to win. Like, that's the strength of the team, and you're right. They didn't get the job done on Saturday. And the concern is that what LSU did, other teams are going to do. You know, other teams are going to copy that strategy and see if they can do the same thing.
Absolutely.
So.
Well, one thing, though, that I do want to address before I forget, and then we'll move on here unless there's anything else you need to add about LSU, is I don't want people to go off the deep end now, because I've seen several people now say, oh, I don't see us winning more than seven games now and this, that, and the other. I mean, come on. I mean, I know we've still got, you know, some tough games to go, but – the 13 team lost to LSU, last year's team lost to LSU, and still went on and beat number one Georgia, number one Alabama. I mean, on any given Saturday, you know, these things happen. And we know what happened, and the coaches know what happened. And so we have certain limitations with this team and this staff and this personnel and everything. But we're not going to go 7-5. We're not. Okay.
No.
So just pump the brakes on the panic button.
Well, I'm going to say this, that if you're like, oh my gosh, this is the end of the world, I would tell you this. In the last eight games this team has played, they have played six top 10 teams.
Yeah.
Okay. Nobody plays a schedule like that ever.
Yeah.
Eight games, six top 10 opponents. Okay. Alabama's going to play one top 10 opponent this year, maybe two, okay? you know, Georgia isn't going to play one until they play, you know, maybe LSU will be ranked there by the time Georgia plays them. I doubt it. But then, whoever they play in the conference title game. You know, a lot of teams don't play anybody this rank like that. So, and we've played six and eight games. So the idea that, like, losing one of these games is the end of the world, like you said at the beginning, you have to have a little bit of perspective about these things. But also, like, it is early in the season, and this team still has a lot of room to grow. They still have a lot of talent. And I think they can go win a bunch of these big games down the road. There's nobody that's unbeatable with the talent that we have on this team. I still think that.
Yeah.
But here's the other side of it. Like, I hope the crap that LSU is really, really good. Because guess what? You know, Georgia and Alabama and Mississippi State all have to go to Baton Rouge. So I hope LSU burns them all to the ground this year. I hope they're the – I mean, listen, if we're not going to win the West, I sure as crap hope LSU does. So that's I feel about it. Like, but LSU may take out our competitors and allow us to win the West. So, you know, I'm a big Coach O fan for at this second, you know, for the next month or two where they got all those teams coming in. So, the other thing I wanted, and we're talking about LSU, I want to give Ensminger some credit because we ragged on him when they promoted him. We ragged on him ahead of this game.
True.
And he called a really smart offensive game. He was very clever in what they did offensively. What they tried to do, and, you know, they got lucky a little bit with the penalties and stuff. It bailed them out on some third downs when they, you know, honestly shouldn't have gotten bailed out. They're, you know, I don't know what it's three or four third downs in this game that they only got because of a penalty on us.
Over and over.
And that's whether it's the referees or not, we got to correct some of the other penalties. So those are on us. We got to do better and we got to eliminate those things because we can't beat good teams if we're giving them extra chances like this. So
I guess it was Hugh Nall that was holding Inswinger back all that time in 2003.
Clearly, in hindsight, that's the lesson.
That was it.
Or maybe, you know, I know this is, you know, not a popular theory, but perhaps Inswinger has grown and learned something in the meantime.
That's impossible, John. That's, you know how this thing works. We don't acknowledge that kind of thing can happen. Everybody's stuck in amber and never changes in college.
And we render immediate and harsh judgment.
That's right. There you go. Yeah, I've got to say, though, that Jason Campbell in 2003 would have had a lot more success if they'd called a pass interference every time he threw the ball. We wouldn't have lost all those games in 2003 if the referee had been a little more favorable like that. There's a line in one of my favorite Roger Zelazny books where Merlin, the Prince of Amber, he sees all these different demonic, hellish creatures, and he sees one really horrible demonic creature running around, and it's chasing another horrible demonic hellish creature. It's just chasing him all over the place. And he just shakes his head and sighs and says, "It's just one damn thing after another." And that's how I felt about the fourth quarter of this game and pretty much the whole game. It was just one damn thing after another. All right, you want to look ahead to Arkansas a little bit?
Sure.
So Arkansas is not good at the football.
No, they're bad.
All right, this has been our preview.
They're not bad in the cool way. They're bad in the man, they suck. They have one of the worst defenses in all of college football.
Mm-hmm. I like it.
On Saturday, they lost to North Texas at home.
Oh, my goodness.
Not just lost, they lost to North Texas at home 44-17.
What the hell is the world coming to?
What was the score?
44-17.
What the hell is the world coming to?
I don't know, Sheriff.
And North Texas is a bowl team, but still, that's insane. And if you haven't seen it, North Texas pulled off one of the great fake punt things in history where their punt returner caught the ball and stood there and kind of casually, like he had called a fair catch, and all the Arkansas defenders kind of ran by him and then jogged off the field, and he waited till they were almost the sideline, and they ran down his
court. No.
He did. It was so great. But no, they're really, really terrible on offense. Chad Morris is the coach, who was the Clemson offensive coordinator years ago and has been at SMU. Defensively, they're an absolute train wreck. Offensively, they had that Cole Kelly guy who plays mostly. He's that big guy that played some against us last year. The other guys they have are not very good. Running back wise, nothing special. They really don't have they have Whaley, who played against us last year, but you know, they don't have the same kind of stud running back they've had in years past.
Darren McFadden is not walking through that door. Felix Jones is not walking through that door. Burt is not walking through that door.
Larry Bird's not walking through that door, fans. Kevin McHale's not walking through that door, and Robert Parrish is not walking through that door.
I haven't gotten to use that in a long time, but you set me up, so I had to go for it.
So the bottom line is the defense is terrible, and Arkansas and Auburn should be able to score however much you want to score. The only counterpoint to that is that the Arkansas coach is a friend of Gus's, and Gus is not going to want to completely embarrass him. He's not going to want to beat him 70-0. So at some point, I think there's going
to
be a purposeful calling off of the dogs, and we're going to, we're going to win the game, but we're going to, go calmly about it.
Release the hounds.
Cop calling off the dogs.
But I would say the only danger for us is if we don't respect Arkansas as a team, and B, we come out with a big hangover from the LSU game.
Well, and that's entirely possible.
It is. That was a tough loss. And it's tough to get back up when you're not playing a really good team again.
And, of course, Arkansas has that hog hex that they throw on us every now and then. So I take nothing for granted. The hog hex is a very real thing. It is a very powerful thing sometimes. So
we have written extensively about the Hog
X. We have written extensively. Some of our finest work in Season of Our Dreams is about the Hog X. We got to pause here for just a second to thank our sponsors who go so above and beyond the call to make sure our show stays on the air. I know that, you know, we've been told before that that when Auburn wins a big game, you know, people enjoy listening to our show and celebrating. And when we lose a game, they kind of look to us to maybe try to have, you know, cooler heads prevail, although there have been times that both of us have been very exercised, as they say. But I do feel like one thing we can offer is that, you know, we're not 17 years old anymore, and we kind of, you know, we've seen this movie a dozen times. We know how it goes. And so even when we're surprised, you know, we're not that surprised usually. It takes a lot to surprise us. You know, it takes something like
a miracle that turned to hair, a miracle that turned to hair,
to really surprise us. So, I like to think that we can provide that service, and so I appreciate that folks that support us and make sure we get to stay on the air, and that would be folks like Christopher Burleson, Joseph Fine, Phil Amthor, Susan Trawick, Ben Spooner, Stephen Thompson, Chris Usher, Justin Bean, Steve Trawick, Richard Stevens. You guys all do such good job of keeping the bills paid and keeping our lights on here. We have new ones like Valiant Hermes, along with Jacob and Robin Fleming, Clay Henson, Auburn Tiger Talk, Ann Congian, Catherine England, George Gaston, Will Summerford, John McCune, Tom Anderson, David Evers, Andrew Barber, Timothy, Steve Harlan, Dan Thompson, Wes Atkinson, Rich Reimer, Jared Albrick, William Glenn Matthews, Mickey B, Hugh Anderson, Shane Bailey, Matt Robbenheimer, Mick Vijakana, Chris Thrash, Logan Chilton, Tony Perry, Alex Wynn, Josh Teal, David Simpson, Earl Ricks, Mike Finley, C.T. Wayne, Michael Kirshner, Dave Powell, and more new folks, Chris Camo and Darren Pyle, Chris, Wardam Wade, Jason Albrick, Randall Walker, Ben Amos, Joshua Corbett, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Patrick Williams, Rob Morgan, Stephen Schuster, James Taylor, John Stubbs, Kenneth Brent Raines, Nicholas Craig, Russell Milling, Matthew Wagstaff, Joey Miller, Mark Squire, Dave Medina, Spanky, Brant Rumble, and J.W. Rice. And some of these folks we have heard from, I think we're going to be seeing them this weekend, which is pretty cool. And if you want to join their ranks and take part in John's SEC Power Poll every week that he sends out and be in on things like our NCAA tournament, our Formula One Fantasy League, our anything that we do, you get discounts and bonuses, and you're going to get early access to our big documentary Auburn Fan Series that's coming up that I've been working on, and John's dad's going to be on hopefully soon and give us some more background stuff. All you got to do, as little as a dollar a month, is go to auwishbone.com. Just go to auwishbone.com. There's a big orange button that says Become a Patron. Click on that, and it'll set you up to where you can help us and be part of the Auburn AU Wishbone family. Now, let me click on this here button and see what is... I'm doing all this in Google Docs, which means I have to switch back and forth now. And so, we have an audio feature from Jared. This is this week's Super Marvel, I guess, superhero. Not always Marvel. This is this week's superhero sort of metaphor for the game. So without further ado.
Hello, Van and John and the rest of the AU Wishbone family. This is Jared Albrick, the yard sale artist from On Her Majesty's Secret Podcast and the Long Box Crusade Podcast, here with this week's Auburn Superhero Battle. This week, Auburn came in looking like Iron Man, and LSU was the dangerous Dr. Doom. Auburn's Iron Man was unfortunately from Tony Stark's alcoholism phase, and it took us a little while to sober up. And while Iron Man has superior tech to Dr. Doom's armor, Doom has something that Tony has always had difficulty with: magic. Dark, evil, swampy bayou magic. That's like fair. The ability to produce or not produce yellow flags at will. And the tech magic combo of Dr. Doom was just a little too much for Auburn's Iron Man in this battle, proving that sometimes the bad guys win. Quick shout out to Pat DJ Christados, who does the audio effects for my segment and owns an actual eagle, for that final soundbite. Speaking of which, War Eagle, Wishbone family.
Oh, I love the eagle. Yeah, that's very fair. And I guess I'm not sure that Jared is even aware. This may have been like another layer of the onion, even beyond what he realized when he said that it was magic from LSU. You know how LSU thinks the magic is back. The magic is back. So, once again, we either make an LSU coach look like a genius or like an idiot. We've gotten plenty of them fired. We've also made them look really smart over the years. In fact, John, I wanted to mention this. The other thing this reminds me of last year and this year, you remember 1995 and 96 when Auburn had pretty darn good teams and we just couldn't beat LSU, remember?
Mm-hmm.
Both away and at home. The 95 one was the Phantom Whistle in Baton Rouge. I was there at that one. I was there at the next one, too. And then 96 was the Barn Burner.
I want to go back to the Phantom Whistle because I think younger fans may not know or may have forgotten about that. Literally, someone in the stands blew a whistle at a key moment in the game, and the Auburn defenders froze, and LSU's offense kept going, and that was a big difference in the game.
I want to say, actually, I think it was Pat Nix just stopped on the play.
You're right.
And got tackled. I think he was like getting ready to throw it, and they blew the whistle, and so Nix just kind of stopped, and the LSU guys just ran up and tackled him.
Yep.
He says, "Well, I heard the whistle. I thought the play was over." And I, nope, wasn't a whistle. Yeah, so. that was a game down in the Bayou where I had just bought a brand new fitted Auburn hat that fitted me perfectly, and after 4 hours of sitting there in that humidity in Tiger Stadium, my hat was too small, and I was never able to wear it again. It just shrank like put in the dryer. Strangest
magic.
Thing. Yeah, it was the magic. Yeah, and when the game was over in 95, when that game was over and we were leaving the stadium, and this was what's his name?
Curly Holman? DiNardo?
No, DiNardo. This was DiNardo's first Auburn game. It was an early season game. And when it was over, as we were leaving the stadium, the PA announcer was like, "The magic is back! The magic is back!" And then he starts talking about something else, and he goes, "On your way home this evening, fans, be careful driving because there's magic in the streets. There's magic." And I'm just like, oh, my gosh, please, really? LSU is so freaking cheesy. They just are so cheesy. All right, let's get to the extended version of...
Thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone podcast.
I just went ahead and blended those two together so I don't have to keep remembering to push two buttons anymore. All right, what we got?
All right, first question comes from Wardam Wade, who says, "Van always says that LSU doesn't beat good Auburn teams in the home game years, so does this mean the 2018 Tigers aren't going to end up being a good team? Can we turn this around in time to win in Starkville and run the table from here on out?"
Please clap.
That's an excellent point. I did think about that. I thought about how when only our worst teams lose to LSU at home, and so the last time a not horrible Auburn team lost to LSU at home was probably the 96 Barn Burner. And before that, we got to go all the way back to before the conference split. The best Auburn team to lose to LSU at home was the Barn Burner game. That was Damian Craig's junior year, 96. Before that, we did not lose to LSU at home until you go all the way back into like the late 70s or something, if then, unless I'm missing one from like 81 or something, which is possible. So, yeah, there's two things possible. Either this Auburn team is going to end up about as good as Damian Craig's 96 team, 8-4, or this Auburn team is the first one in decades to be really good and still lose at home to LSU.
I got some trends to break there. All right. Our next question is from Joseph Fine, who says, "Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Would the honorable gentleman be in favor of a rule mandating kickoffs in the evening when the heat index is forecasted over 100 degrees? Michigan never plays night games because it's so cold there in the winter, and I would think the SEC should adopt a similar stance to the heat in September."
Television don't care about no temperature. I mean,
I don't have facts to back this up.
But I'm pretty sure it's just what time, what channel, what network, and the rest of it is totally immaterial. deal with it is their answer, pretty much.
Yeah, TV rules the world on that stuff.
It does.
All right. Next email is from Derek Kane, who emailed us at auwishbone@gmail.com, and he says, "This feeling is way too familiar. Every year, it seems like we get really excited about how great our team is, and the inevitable happens. We blow a game we should not blow. Is this the new norm? Is this what we can expect for as long as we keep Gus as our coach? I don't want to get on the fire Gus bandwagon, but I do have serious questions worth pondering. Is Gus getting better as a head coach? If so, what are the indicators that prove such?"
No, that's fair. This is something I've been thinking about. Auburn, as a program, we never just seem to reload and keep going at the same level. We're the opposite of that. When we lose players to going pro or graduation, we have other really good players in the program coming up, but they're at different positions. Like, if we lose a really good quarterback, it seems like it's 2 or 3 years until we get another really good quarterback. We may have great running backs during that interim. We may have great defensive ends during that interim. We may have a great kicker during that interim. But we never seem to have 22 great players, and when 5 of them leave, we plug in 5 more great players. You know, it's like we'll have, out of 22 players, it's like we'll have 14 really good players, and then when 5 of them leave, we plug in 2, and we don't get the other 3 back until 5 more have left. You know what I mean? It never lines up perfectly, it seems like. And because of that, we're always a team that finds a way to lose a game here and there. And it's just how it's going to be, I guess. I don't know. I mean, not many programs can do that.
The consistency part is, I think, what drives people crazy, because this team and Gus as a coach and the coaching staff has shown that they have the ability to beat anybody.
Yeah.
I mean, the only coach in college football who's beat Nick Saban more than once is Gus. The current active coaches.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it's the fact that we could lose a game. But, now, I would say this. We don't lose the games like Wisconsin lost at home to BYU this weekend.
Right.
We don't lose to games like to teams we have no business losing to out of conference.
We never
teams,
have.
We're the last have. Place teams, whatever. We flirted with that. Jacksonville State.
We did. Oh, we flirted with Utah State. We've done a lot of flirting, John. But we don't ever close the deal with those teams. That is true. And I was going to say, you know, gosh, it seems like this is the only coaching staff that's ever had that problem. Oh, wait, Tommy Tuberville. This is just Auburn's thing. Tuberville was exactly the same way. We would beat number one Florida and then lose to Arkansas. This is not new, folks. This is old.
All right, we're going to keep going. We got more questions. Next question comes from Steven. Is that Steven at AUNI? He says, question for the Wishbone. Was this Coach Steele's worst called game at Auburn? The LSU offensive staff identified the officials were calling pass interference against press coverage and took advantage of that.
They did.
What puzzled me most continuously, rushing forward, getting no penetration but not adjusting. I'm no coach, but I'm sure adjustments could have been made to regain the advantage. And they did do some of that. There was, especially in the kind of the middle of the game when Auburn was playing better, we actually started playing some zone a little bit at times and getting away from press man. But we definitely could have done some different things. I think there are times when we could have blitzed somebody off the edge, you know, a corner or safety that was out in space. And I think that could have that's something we didn't really try in this game. Everybody we blitzed was kind of right around the tackle box. So, but Coach Steele, you know, took the blame for some of the defensive play calls in the game. He said, and I think he and the defense as a whole admitted that they could have played better.
Yes.
All right. So, our next questions are from Reynolds Wolf.
Like an unwanted neighbor that comes over and visits.
From the Weather Channel, Reynolds Wolf.
Thundersnow.
I had that standing by.
All right. Number one, looking back, comparing, contrasting our opponents from our third and first games this season, is LSU that great or is Washington just average?
I think Washington is pretty good, and they won big the other night.
They beat Utah at Utah. I think Washington's good. I think LSU's good. I honestly think they're about the same. I think we just played worse in the LSU game.
I agree. I mean, I think that's it. I think LSU's better than we thought, but this is not a great LSU team. I'm going to go ahead. This LSU team's going to lose at least three, if not four, games this year. We're going to end up with a better overall record than this LSU team.
I think they're pretty good because I think their defense is so good. I agree. Like, their offense isn't great.
They're going to lose more games than we do. They're going to lose to Alabama. They're going to lose Mississippi State. They're going to lose a couple more.
Georgia.
Yeah.
We'll see. I think they could beat one of those three teams. All right. He says, this is back to Reynolds Wolf question. Which drives you more insane? A, that we've blown two double-digit leads in the fourth quarter to LSU in consecutive years, or B, that Gus has the best record of any active coach against Nick Saban but has lost Ed Orgeron twice?
It's just one of those things you shake your head at.
To me, it's definitely A.
Oh, yeah, but I'm just saying the very fact that B exists is just like, weird stuff. It's just weird stuff happens.
I don't think Orgeron is some kind of idiot coach like some people do. Like, he can't walk and chew gum at the same time. But he clearly knows how to recruit, and I think he knows how to get players focused and ready to play in tough environments. And I think, he clearly has a handle on what he's doing.
Yeah.
In this game, so we'll see. Reynolds says, comment, looks like Stidham will be in zero danger of leaving early if he keeps playing like he did Saturday. And we had another question about that.
That's a good point, though. The NFL may look at him and say, "Nah, he stayed Auburn. It's all right."
This is, again, what I said at the beginning. Like, we need Stidham to play at a much higher level. Mm-hmm. If we're going to beat good teams. Right. I mean, with the running backs we have, with the offensive line we have, he has to be the guy. Like, Kerryon was the offensive player of the year in the SEC last year. We lost him.
Right.
So that's a huge void in the offense and in the productivity and the reliability. And Stidham has to fill that void. He's the guy. He has to be that the anchor of the offense and make stuff happen. And he has to really play well. There are times when the pressure's on when he doesn't do that. And I think he has to, get better over the course of this season. I think he has a lot of talent, a lot of ability. Honestly, like you mentioned earlier, his running, he did not run the ball during this game at all in design runs. And I thought there were several times when we were handing the ball off to the running backs that if he had done the zone read keeper kind of thing, that he could have easily gotten 5 or 6 yards and kept the LSU defense kind of off balance and off the running backs a little bit. I think it would have helped. And I don't want him to run and get hurt, but I think it's against good teams, we're going to have to do that, especially with the running backs the way they are. He's going to have 3 to 4 carries a game. A couple more questions. From Dan in North Carolina. For podcast, I don't put all the blame on the coaches. Play calling seemed fine. Decisions are mostly sound. But the issue of O-line play plus turnovers plus penalties have to get fixed. What's the percentage chance they get fixed? And he says, P.S., I'm still optimistic for this year.
Well, that's good. I want us to stay optimistic. I think we're still going to have a good season. And we could still have a very good season, but
I'm optimistic. I'm not a drive the bus off the cliff person. So
yeah, right. Well, you and I have a long documented history on this show of trying to talk people off the ledge, So the only times we've really about ready to jump ourselves was like Clemson, Texas A&M last year, or whenever it was, year before last, whenever that was. I can't even remember now.
Yep. Next question is from Logan Chilton. He says, I'm not that sold that LSU is that good. And officiating aside, I'm nervous this could be a 4-5 loss team now. He says, Texas A&M, Mississippi State, Georgia, Bama all feel like potential or sure losses now. Am I too apocalyptic? Convince me I'm wrong, please.
Because the same team that lost to LSU last year and gave up way more points than this year's team did in that situation, went on to beat Georgia and Alabama and Mississippi State by like 40.
I would say again, like, this team didn't play well when we lost to a good LSU team at home in a game we shouldn't have lost. Even as bad as we played, we still should have won.
Still should have won, right.
But the reality is we can play a lot better, and I think we will play a lot better in those other games. And the other part is, again, okay, we played two top 10 teams and allowed 21 and 22 points. It probably shouldn't have – 16 and 22 points and shouldn't have allowed that many.
Right.
Okay? So our defense is really, really, really good. Yep. We don't have to score that much to win these games. So I think the offense can get a little bit better, a little bit more efficient, a little bit more explosive. And I think, again, bringing the freshmen in more is that part of it. And I think throwing the ball more, being more aggressive with that can work. And I think the defense will adjust a few things. We're probably going to shake up the offensive line this week. But again, like Mississippi State, that's going to be a really tough game. He can't throw the ball. We're going to be able to beat him. Georgia's going to be a tough game. Alabama's going to be a tough game. I think we can win one of those. Texas A&M is better, but they're coming to Auburn, and I think against our defense, we're going to be okay.
Unless there's a butt snap.
All right, or block field goal.
Oh, gosh.
Last question. Josh Corbett says,
yes.
What happened to Auburn in the fourth quarter? Is the old Gus back, sat on an 11-point lead, and kind of gave it away in a must-win game?
I don't feel like we sat on it. I feel like that we just started making mistakes. You know, when you start on your own 10-yard line and you're just trying to get out of the hole, that's not sitting on a lead. That's just – That's other problems. I'm not saying there weren't problems, but that's the problem is not you're sitting on the lead. We weren't like just running up the middle three times and punting. It was that we were getting holding calls. We were trying to go downfield. I don't think it's fair to say that we were sitting on the lead and trying to run the clock out in this game. I think we were trying to move the ball. And again, in that imperfect storm, the offense just kind of put itself in a hole too many times and couldn't, you know, when you're first and 20, you know, second and 11 on your own 10-yard line or something in the fourth quarter, that's tough, especially when you don't have that big running game that you're used to having and you're having to throw the ball, and they know you're having to throw the ball. You know, there's only so many times that Whitlow on the draw gets you seven or eight, 9 yards, you know, so
I disagree with the getting too conservative thing too. I think there were two. Caleb Kim had two holding penalties
right
in the second half during this time, and one of them was on our. I'm looking at it now. We were up, you know, 21-10. Okay, We got first down, all right? We run the ball for a yard. On second down, we throw the ball to Schwartz, and there's a 10-yard holding penalty. And then it's second and 19, and we end up, you know, not getting a first down and having to punt. So
right.
It wasn't a conservative thing. Like, we had a good play set up to Schwartz.
Right.
But, we got in a hole, and there was no getting out of it.
Exactly.
And then, they score in the long TD pass. We get the ball back. A first play, first down, we throw the ball to Whitlow. He loses 3 yards and we get a holding penalty. Okay. So we try to get back, but you know, it's third and five. Stidham has to run for his life and he doesn't get it.
Right.
So we ran two plays with Whitlow to get it back from, you know, first and 20 down to third and five. And then we try to throw it on third down. Nobody's open. Instead of trying to run it, didn't make it. So I don't feel like we were conservative in those plays. I feel like the two penalties really hamstrung the offense way more than the play calling.
Chandler Cox was open, but he ran it anyway, which was unfortunate. So
yep, I agree.
All right, that.
That's it.
All right, let's zip through this very quickly and get on out of here. We talked about a little bit of this already.
Let's take a trip around the SEC.
Sorry, Mira. So Ole Miss, my goodness, it was 7-0, and it turned into that Auburn-Florida game from 1990 where one team scores first and then the other goes splat. Anything to say about Ole Miss or Alabama quickly?
Ole Miss's defense is wretched. Alabama's offense is very, very good.
Dang.
They are really, really good on offense.
Vanderbilt just about did it. They held in there with Notre Dame.
Vanderbilt's not bad. I think the thing to pay attention to is that the bottom teams in the East have all raised their level up, mm-hmm. where like a year ago, Florida, Tennessee, Kentucky, Vanderbilt, they were all like the 50th or 60th best team in the country, and they're all about 30th now. Like, they're way better.
Yeah.
Vanderbilt's an example. Like, they went on a road to a good Notre Dame team and hung with them.
They sure did. All right, Florida beat Colorado State in, I guess, the Spanky Bowl. Missouri, wow, I didn't see or anything about this. Missouri beat Purdue 40-37, so okay. I don't know what to do. We take anything out of that? We don't even play Missouri this year, unfortunately.
But Missouri's not bad, and they play Georgia in a few weeks. That'll be interesting.
Go Tigers. Let's see, A&M beat Louisiana Monroe. Who cares? Marshall at South Carolina canceled because of the rain. Mississippi State beat Louisiana Lafayette 56-10. That's about what I would expect. Anything of note from that game? Noting I didn't get to see any of these. So.
No. There's none of the rest of these games. Georgia beat
North Texas beat Arkansas. We talked about that. Good Lord. I'm going to go watch that game on YouTube now. Next week, A&M at Alabama. Does A&M have any chance, or are they going to hang tough for about 10 minutes and then fold up like a cheap lawn chair?
It'll be interesting to see. It's Kellen Mond against that Alabama defense. He played really good against Clemson, but that was at home.
It's in Tuscaloosa.
The biggest thing is like Alabama's offense is way better than Clemson, so I'm not sure how A&M's going to hold up against them.
Yeah.
But I think A&M can hang around for a while. I really do. I think Alabama's going to win, but I think A&M will hang in for a half or so.
Georgia. Go ahead.
Georgia, Missouri is the noon game, so we may get to watch some of that while we're walking around campus and stuff.
Oh yeah, right. Yeah, that's right. South Carolina at Vandy. I mean, we'll see what Vandy has, because Carolina doesn't seem to be quite as good as we had thought, and Vandy seems to be better than we thought. So we'll see. Florida at Tennessee in the bowl. This is a game that used to be must see SEC TV, and now it's just who cares. But we'll see. Mississippi State at Kentucky. Now, there's a game to keep an eye on, because Mississippi State just assumes they're going to win this, but Kentucky's
not terrible. They're not awesome, but at home, even in some of our great years, we've had tough road games at Kentucky. So
that's right.
This is a dangerous spot for Mississippi State.
The Cam's team had to kick a field goal in the last second to beat Kentucky in Lexington. Louisiana Tech at LSU, couldn't care less. Kent State at Ole Miss. Kent State, here's my prediction. I have no idea anything about Kent State. The only thing I know about Kent State is that, like, Saban went there and there was the thing during the Vietnam War. That's the only two things I know about Kent State. Oh, and they briefly changed their name to Kent, and now they're back to Kent State. I wonder if Mississippi State could change their name to Mississippi for a couple of years just to confuse the crap out of everybody and then go back to being Mississippi State again. That would be funny. But anyway, Kent State, my prediction, I have, again, if SIU could be 42-41 or whatever at the half with Ole Miss, then Kent State could lead Ole Miss at the half. So I'm going to go ahead and say Kent State will lead Ole Miss at the half. Ole Miss will win, but Kent State will be leading at the half. How do you like that?
Ole Miss is a good offense, really productive, but they're really they can run a little bit, but they're still pretty one-dimensional, but their defense is terrible. And their offensive line is not as good as it was the last couple of years.
If I told you that the Ole Miss-SIU game would be like 42-41 at the half, would you have believed it?
No, but I think that just shows like how bad their defense is. Like, it is really, really bad.
Yeah.
And our former coach is their coordinator now, so...
That's right. Well, I think that's going to do it. We've put in a good solid almost hour and a half post-mortem on the LSU game, looking at Arkansas. Let me say one more time, come on out on Saturday, afternoon. We'll be at AU Bookstore Friday afternoon and Saturday morning. We'll have two different occasions to be there to say hello to everybody. I'll have copies of Decades of Dominance and Season of Our Dreams, but I won't have many. So if you're wanting to get a copy and get John and me to sign it, come early. They're 10 or 15 bucks a piece. I'm not sure what the bookstore is charging, 10 or 15. But John and I'll happy to slap our signatures on them for you. Or like I said, if you bring Game of Thrones, we'll sign it for you. I love it. All right. We'll see you guys in just a few days on the plains. It should be awesome, John.
Sounds fun.
All right. Our time is up. We thank you for yours. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/auwishbone and follow the show on Twitter at auwishbone. War Eagle.
So what becomes of you, my love, when they have finally stripped you off the handbags and the glad rags that your granddad had to sweat so you could buy?
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.
Go to bed.